Our next case this morning is number 07-1131, John Bull Osage against the United States. Ms. Plaster.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Jennifer Plaster, court-appointed counsel appearing on behalf of the petitioner-appellant John Bull Osage. I apologize. This case is about the government's recognized failure to comply with the obligations of an international treaty to notify a detained foreign national of his right to contact his consulate. In light of this failure, Osagedy's counsel, despite being required to be aware of and to act to protect her client's rights, failed to seek any remedy on his behalf. The district court, facing Osagedy's resulting ineffective assistance of counsel claim, erroneously dismissed his claim without first granting him an evidentiary hearing at which to explore the effect of that failure. This court then granted a certificate of appealability in this case, finding that Osagedy had made a substantial showing as to the denial of a constitutional right as to whether his counsel was ineffective for failing to seek any remedy for the violation of his Vienna Convention rights.
Ms. Plaster,
is there any case that you know of where any sort of remedy has been granted on this basis?
Your Honor, there are two state court cases cited in our reply brief, Ledesma versus State and Valdez versus State. One is an Iowa case and the other is a, I apologize, I can't remember off the top of my head. I am very sorry. But in both of those cases, an ineffective assistance of counsel claim was recognized. In Ledesma, the case was remanded.
No, but I say, was any remedy ever granted to anybody on this basis?
Your Honor, in Ledesma, it was remanded for resentencing, and the Valdez case was remanded for a new trial. I apologize, am I not answering the question the court is asking?
Let me follow up with a sister question to that. Are there any cases of this ilk in which a defendant has presented evidence from her or his consulate as to the types of help of assistance, let's say, that the consulate would have provided if it had been contacted by the defendant for help?
Your Honor, there have been multiple cases in which the consulate itself provided evidence as to what it would have done, or cases in which the consulate came involved.
I'm having a hard time.
I apologize, Your Honor. Is this better? All right. There are multiple cases in which the consulate itself presented evidence as to what it would have done, or cases in which the consulate became involved at a later stage in the proceedings. For example, in the Sanchez-Lamas case that the Supreme Court decided last year, the Mexican consulate provided evidence as to how it would have participated in finding mitigating evidence for the defendants when that evidence was available specifically through its resources in Mexico.
Now, your brief at many points mentions other potential relief or other remedies that Osagedy could have requested other than dismissal of the indictment. What relief might this have been?
Your Honor, we believe there are multiple kinds. One example might be a resentencing or a reduction in the sentencing. We believe that in particular, the court could consider whatever harm was suffered as a result of the violation of the Vienna Convention to be mitigating circumstances for the sentencing purposes. We also believe that the assistance of the consulate may have affected the determination of relevant conduct in this case, and therefore, if the relevant conduct was determined to have not been correctly decided, then a resentencing would be a logical result.
So if I thought that it was possible that his only right under the Vienna Convention would have been to lodge a civil complaint under Section 1983, I'd be wrong.
Your Honor, we don't think a Section 1983 would be adequate for all violations under the Vienna Convention. We do acknowledge that it is an option for some defendants, but particularly under circumstances where the violation of the Vienna Convention resulted in either an erroneous conviction or erroneous attribution of relevant conduct, we think that a Section 1983 action doesn't meet the harm suffered and wouldn't begin to compensate the defendant.
You know, you in your brief, you're correct that the cases that the government cites are ones that discuss the unavailability of the exclusionary rule for violations of the Vienna Convention. But if a Vienna Convention violation isn't sufficient to suppress certain evidence, then isn't it unlikely to be sufficient to dismiss an indictment, which from the brief appears to be the main relief that Mr. Segede claims he would have sought?
Your Honor, we agree that dismissal of the indictment would be unlikely, but we believe that the remedy granted needs to be in proportion to the harm suffered. And as I mentioned, there may be cases where the defendant's harm suffered was so extensive that dismissal of the indictment is warranted. We do believe that dismissal of the indictment should be differentiated from suppression of the evidence, in that suppression is really sort of a niche rule that's geared towards evidence gathering. And this is unlike cases where a defendant wasn't given his Miranda rights, where he was unable to protect the evidence that he gave, so to speak. Suppression of the
In this case, what should the remedy be?
Your Honor, we believe the remedy in this case needs to be determined by the district court after it's remanded for an evidentiary hearing.
Is that the argument you made in the district court?
Your Honor, in the district court, Osagedie filed a pro se petition that sought dismissal of the indictment in response to his Vienna Convention violation. But we believe that when looking at his petition liberally, as is afforded pro se petitions, and when considering the record as a whole, the district court should have considered the availability of any remedy to him, as he clearly raised what he believed to be violations that harmed him.
I didn't understand what you said.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. We believe that at the district court level, Osagedie filed a pro se petition which should have been afforded liberal construction. So although we acknowledge that in his pro se petition he specifically sought dismissal of the indictment as a remedy for the violation of his Vienna Convention rights, we believe that the district court should have afforded that petition liberal construction and considered the record as a whole. And we think there are facts in the record which may lead to a finding of a prejudice for which a different remedy would be appropriate.
What's an appropriate remedy here?
Your Honor, I think that depends on the showing at an evidentiary hearing, which we believe is warranted.
Well, first of all, you have to have a hearing, right?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
So that's what you're really asking for at this point, isn't it?
It is, Your Honor. We believe that Osagedie's petition raised facts which, if proven to be true, would entitle him to relief, and we believe that the standard for an evidentiary hearing is therefore met. There's no dispute here that
I don't think you have to make any showing that the court could fashion a viable remedy?
Your Honor, we do think that there is some threshold level of a showing. We believe, however, that in this case Osagedie has met it.
How?
We believe that there are facts in the record as a whole and alleged in Osagedie's petition which suggest prejudice that was deserving of further exploration at an evidentiary hearing. For example, as an initial matter, Osagedie may have had difficulty understanding the American court system. And as this court and multiple other courts have recognized, the Vienna Convention and consular access provided by that convention acts as a cultural bridge for defendants to understand proceedings. More specifically in this case, there are at least two suggestions in the record of prejudice which may have harmed his proceedings, and these both go towards the relevant conduct determination, which the district court judge determined by preponderance of the evidence standard, and the sentencing judge recognized was at least somewhat of a close call. For example, here there was a cousin of Osagedie's who appeared to have also been Nigerian and was at least at some point in time confused for Osagedie and was involved in these transactions. That cousin, had he been able to be found and provided evidence, may have provided some mitigating evidence or some questioning evidence for the relevant conduct determination. In addition, there's mention in the record of these tapes, which were eventually translated and analyzed, one of which proved not to be Osagedie, and the others were not able to be fully analyzed. The speaker on the tapes must have been either speaking in Nigerian or had a strong Nigerian accent for it to be Mr. Osagedie. Therefore, the Nigerian consulate may have been able to assist with identifying a regional dialect, translating the tapes, or providing more accurate voice analysis. In this case, there's no dispute about some simple facts. The government failed to notify Osagedie of his rights, and his counsel failed to act on his behalf. The government suggests that her failure to do so was not deficient, but we disagree. We believe that her failure to seek a remedy on his behalf was objectively unreasonable, because his counsel, under the Strickland standard, is charged with knowing the relevant laws applicable to his defense, and she should have been fully aware of his Vienna Convention rights. She had the advantage of multiple sources that recognized the importance of Vienna Convention notification. For example, she had the plain language of the treaty itself, which this court has confirmed grants individually enforceable rights. She had a growing body of case law recognizing the individually enforceable right outside of this circuit. She had the interpretations of the International Court of Justice in three cases, Paraguay versus the United States, the LeGrand case, and the Avena case, all recognizing an individual right to notification and all suggesting that the United States had an obligation to provide some remedy for that violation. She had the American Bar Association's guidelines for the appointment and performance of defense counsel in death penalty cases, which recommended that defense counsel always seek to protect Vienna Convention rights. And she actually had several cases recognizing potential claims for ineffective assistance of counsel based on counsel's failure to take the action she should have taken. Despite all of these sources, and despite there being no strategic reason for her not to do so, Osagedi's counsel still failed to act on his behalf. Osagedi clearly alleged this failure in his pro se Section 2255 petition. In light of these allegations, after a review of the pro se petition and the record in this case, the district court should have granted an evidentiary hearing because the motions in the files and the records of Osagedi's case do not conclusively show that he's entitled to no relief.
What would the purpose of the evidentiary hearing be? To determine the credibility of the possible involvement of the cousin in Nigeria or what?
Perhaps, Your Honor. I think that at a minimum
what
the evidence.
What else is there to investigate?
Well, I think at a minimum the evidentiary hearing would have to include testimony from the Nigerian consulate as to the assistance it could and would have provided in this case. I think that the evidentiary hearing would also probably entail some exploration of the cousin, perhaps more analysis of the tapes, and also testimony from Osagedi himself as to what assistance he would have sought from the Nigerian consulate had he had the opportunity once he better understood what they could have provided. Finally, Article 36 of the Vienna Convention requires that full effect be given to the purposes for which the provision was intended. We believe that in order for there to be that full effect, there must be a remedy available for criminal defendants. There are important policy reasons for this court to give full consideration to Osagedi's claim. As Justice O'Connor pointed out in her dissenting opinion in the first Medellin case, the often confessed noncompliance with the Vienna Convention has become a vexing problem. If there's no remedy available for a defendant whose Vienna Convention rights have been violated, there's no reason for the government to begin to comply with this treaty. To find that the Vienna Convention claim would be futile if raised at the trial court level makes the recognized obligation of notification nothing more than illusory and takes away all meaning and effect from the treaty itself. The court has no further questions. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll hear now from Ms. Owens.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. Annie Owens on behalf of the United States. This court should affirm the judgment of the district court because it correctly held that appellant's counsel was not ineffective for failing to request a remedy for the alleged Vienna Convention violation in this case.
Would there have been any downside to Osagedi's attorney seeking some remedy because of the Vienna Convention violation?
Your Honor, I think it's important to remember here that this is an ineffective assistance of counsel case, and the question here is whether counsel's performance fell below an objectively reasonable standard.
Okay, so would there have been any downside?
There may have been. In this case, appellant pleaded guilty and was sentenced to a below-guideline sentence. There was a sentencing hearing that was held on May 7, 2004, where the government presented two witnesses who had been involved in the investigation in this case. And one of the main themes of appellant's counsel's defense to the relevant conduct was that there was a Nigerian cousin somewhere who had fled to Nigeria, who, in fact, was responsible for some of the drug quantity in this case. And in that case, it was very convenient to have the specter of the cousin looming there that they could pin some of the relevant conduct on. And so I might suggest that it was a strategic decision that they did not ask consulate to help or took any action upon themselves to find this cousin. Indeed, a couple of times, and this transcript is reproduced in the record of the direct criminal proceeding, and a couple of times appellant's counsel said the government didn't do anything to find the cousin. Then they just let this guy escape. So I think in one of the main specific allegations of prejudice that they do make for the first time in the reply brief is that the consulate might have been able to help find this cousin, but I would submit that that was more a strategic decision at the time not to locate the cousin.
Well, now, a district court is required to hold an evidentiary hearing unless the motion and the files and the records conclusively, and that's the word, conclusively show that the prisoner is entitled to no relief. Do you think the government has shown conclusively that he wasn't entitled to the relief?
Yes, Your Honor, for two reasons. One, and because this is an ineffective assistance of counsel case, we look at the state of the law at the time. And at that time, you had the Supreme Court and 10 circuit courts of appeals refusing to enforce the Vienna Convention in the context of a criminal proceeding. Including this court, there were 3 separate opinions on the books refusing to enforce the Vienna Convention in a criminal proceeding. And so I would submit that there was no rule at the time on which a competent attorney would have relied to state a claim for substantive relief for a Vienna Convention violation. So the lack of a rule alone would be enough for the district court to deny an evidentiary hearing.
Because they're at the time, though, but there's subsequently been a change in the law in this circuit, isn't that right?
Well, the circuit has recognized that the Vienna Convention may be enforced through civil proceedings through Section 1983. That was the Yogi case. But
we have to look at that as being the controlling law here?
Well, at the time, Yogi had not been decided yet. But even more importantly, I think, this court made a clear distinction between a private right on one hand and various remedial measures that affect criminal proceedings on the other. And that's a quote out of Yogi at page 832.
We decided to leave for another day the question as to whether the Vienna Convention would directly support a private remedy, but we certainly did note that the convention was concerned about individual rights, and several other courts have assumed without deciding that the Vienna Convention grants individual rights. And what these rights may be, of course, we just don't know, but it seems pretty clear that a violation of the Vienna Convention may not be cause to suppress evidence, but what relief a defendant might get is far from clear. And it just seems to me that a defendant ought to at least be permitted to present evidence of how he may have been affected by the violation of the convention.
Your Honor, you are correct that the law is far from clear. In fact, appellant can't even state what kind of remedy his counsel should have asked for below. There's a footnote in the opening brief where there seems to be some confusion over what the remedy he is asking for in this Section 2255 proceeding is.
Sure, but the bottom line is that in this case, may have had very little to gain, but he certainly had nothing at all to lose. And there's at least one district court that has granted a petition for post-conviction relief where a lawyer failed to inform a prisoner of his right to contact his consulate. And as long as there's even a slim chance of some relief and no chance of harm to the case, there's no strategic reason for keeping the argument out.
Your Honor, if I may, that here we're dealing with ineffective assistance of counsel, and that's right. Just not the standard for ineffective assistance of counsel. The standard is not whether there's something out there that precludes the attorney from asking for relief or that wouldn't harm the attorney if she did, but it's what a reasonable attorney, given the state of the law at the time, would have done. And I think particularly because we had the Supreme Court and 10 circuit courts, including this court, refusing to enforce the Vienna Convention in the context of criminal proceedings, there just wasn't a rule on the books at the time that an attorney might have looked to state a claim for relief. And if I may, even since Yogi was decided, or prior to Yogi, the Supreme Court handed down Sanchez-Llamas last term, and I think expressed further doubt that the Vienna Convention would be remedied properly through in the context of a criminal proceeding. In fact, it said, and this is a quote from Sanchez-Llamas, "In petitioner's view, although full effect may not automatically require an exclusionary rule, it does require an appropriate judicial remedy of some kind. There is reason to doubt this interpretation. In particular, there is little indication that other parties to the convention have interpreted Article 36 to require a judicial remedy in the context of criminal prosecutions." And if this court were to so hold, particularly in the context of an ineffective assistance of counsel proceeding, and particularly on 2255, it wouldn't make sense to hold that counsel was ineffective for failing to request a substantive remedy, especially in light of the Supreme Court's statement in that case. Moreover, this court would be the first circuit to hold that the Vienna Convention is enforceable in the context of a criminal proceeding, and in fact would put the United States in a category of one in that regard. I think it's worth pointing out that overseas, when the State Department uses diplomatic measures to enforce the notification provision overseas, we certainly do not file lawsuits or ask for some sort of substantive relief in the context of criminal proceedings, nor do we encourage our U.S. citizens to do so. This is enforced primarily through diplomatic and political channels.
Suppose a hypothetical U.S. attorney announced that it would now be the policy of the office never to inform foreign defendants of their Vienna Convention rights because this hypothetical U.S. attorney reasons that she doesn't believe that the law supported a remedy for the violation of those rights anyway. Is it your argument that a criminal defendant could receive no relief for this clear and intentional violation of the Geneva Convention, of the Vienna Convention?
No relief in the context of a criminal proceeding. That's for no judicial relief. The appropriate response in that case would be to contact the State Department. And I can say almost for certain that such a policy would not stand because that would put our nation in breach of our Vienna Convention obligations. In fact, the State Department issues a compliance manual to federal, local, and state law enforcement officials encouraging compliance with the notification provision providing instructions on how to comply. It's consular notification and access, and this is something that has been distributed to the U.S. Attorney's offices as well as local law enforcement at least since the 1990s.
Well, my problem, I have to tell you, my problem is that the government's brief seems to conflate the right with the remedy / prejudice. I mean, it's clear. It is clear that Osagedi had the right. He had the right to be informed of his Vienna Convention rights. He may not have had a very effective remedy. He may not have had any for violation of that right, but that goes toward the prejudice prong. And that really does not relate to the fact that the man has a right, and that right was, he did not enjoy that right.
Your Honor, even if that is the case, he still does have to show prejudice, and in this case, he just can't. His allegations of prejudice are certainly too speculative even to trigger an evidentiary hearing in this case. He has not brought forth any affidavits, letters, any sort of anything to demonstrate that he would be able to prove if this evidentiary hearing...
Well, is that a conclusive showing, though? That seems to be the test under the statute, is whether he's entitled to an evidentiary hearing.
Well, certainly, and I think that we also, this court should look at the record before the district court at the time. And at the time, in fact, most of these allegations of prejudice were made for the very first time in the reply brief on appeal, and they just weren't in front of the district court. This court was very clear, even recently, in its en banc decision in Pruitt v. Moat, when we're talking about abuse of discretion, and that's the standard of review here for the denial of an evidentiary hearing, the court looks at the record that was before the district court. It wouldn't make sense to hold that the district court abused its discretion for something that wasn't before the court when the court was exercising that discretion. And I think that's an important point. And at the time, there was not any mention in the supporting affidavit of the Vienna Convention violation at all. And there was nothing to indicate that there were these specific allegations of prejudice that he has now made in his reply. And it's true, opposing counsel has pointed out that he was pro se below. And even though pro se pleadings are construed liberally, that doesn't mean a district court must invent factual scenarios.
Yes, but if someone doesn't know they have a right to something that they have a conclusive right to, what are you expecting from, you know, a foreign national who doesn't know he has the right?
Your Honor, this may be... I think that this is no small point. He hasn't even alleged that he didn't know he had that right. He hasn't alleged, I believe for the very first time in the reply brief, that was the first time that he even alleged that he would have contacted the consulate had he known about the right. And even now, he can't point to anything that the consulate would have done to help assuage some of this prejudice that he's now claiming.
That's why he needs the evidentiary hearing, so that someone from the consulate can come and say, look, this is what we would have done about this right that you had no idea you had.
I see my time is up. May I respond? I think that... he has had every opportunity since learning about his ability to contact his consulate to contact the consulate and find out specifics on how the consulate could have helped. In other cases, in Sanchez-Llamas, the petitioner Bustillo offered a supporting affidavit. In the Sixth Circuit, the Emily Bunham decision, the petitioner or the defendant there offered a supporting affidavit from the consulate. There are a number of ways he could make a more concrete showing that there's a potential for anything to come of this evidentiary hearing, and he just hasn't been able to do that.
Of course, that wasn't the Nigerian consulate, and every consulate is different.
In fact, Your Honor, in the Sixth Circuit, it was the Nigerian consulate.
In which case?
That was Emwig Bunham.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
What consulate was the other case that you just noted?
Sanchez-Llamas? That was Honduran. Yes.
Thank you.
We respectfully ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Holmes. How much time did Ms. Plaster have? 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to address a few points. First, I think that it's important to note that with regard to counsel's decision not to pursue a remedy for the violation of the Vienna Convention, there is absolutely no strategic reason in this case. And I think that the government's attempt to suggest that counsel had a strategic reason for not wanting to find an individual who may have been responsible for some of this conduct doesn't make any sense. We also believe that this court is correct to point out that the government has not conclusively shown that Osagedy was not entitled to any relief. Osagedy does deserve an evidentiary hearing on this case. And the point is that Osagedy could have received a remedy. Your Honor is correct that Yogi is the controlling law in this circuit with regard to the Vienna Convention. And Your Honor is also correct that Yogi did not preclude the availability of enforcement in criminal court. We believe that the Yogi opinion left the door open for that, as did Sanchez-Lamas and the 10 circuits that the government referred to in her argument. Those 10 circuits referred only to suppression of the evidence as a remedy or decided the case on other matters and simply assumed without deciding that there was no assumed without deciding that there was an individual right under the Vienna Convention. We believe that those doors are still open, those avenues are still available. Finally, there was law on the books in the form of the language of the treaty itself, which this court recognized in Chaparro Alcantara has the same force and effect as a statute, in the form of Ledesma, Valdez, and a case from the Northern District of Illinois, Made versus Shomig, which recognized that there may be an ineffective assistance of counsel claim for failure to seek this. There was law on the books which should have suggested to counsel that this was an appropriate track for her to take. There are no other questions. Osagedy respectfully requests that this court remand the case to the district court for an evidentiary hearing at which to explore his allegations of prejudice. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel for a very fine argument this morning. Ms. Plaster, you took this case by appointment of the court, and you have the deep thanks of the court for the fine effort that you have given on behalf of your client. We also thank your law firm for having taken the case and for having expended its resources in support of your efforts. The case will be taken under advisement.